episode 250. It is so interesting to record this after doing the podcast now for almost 2 years exactly. We are heading into our next 250 episodes, and I figured a good place to bookend this. I did a episode 100 Q&A. Now I'm going to do an episode 250 Q&A, and I'm excited. There are a bunch of great questions in here, and let's get right to it. When are you moving to Austin? From Matt McLeod. Matt, that's a great question. I was in Austin last week for the past 4 days. Just got back. Incredible time. The people there are so kind. Everyone's so into fitness, into crypto. It feels like very much the city's living in the future. And because of that reason, I'm strongly considering a move to Austin. I don't even know if it's going to be moving there, but maybe going there every month or something like that, because I'm obsessed with the city in general. There's too many people I want to meet in such a short time frame. And Matt, you're actually one of the people who I wanted to see, but couldn't get a chance to because I was only there for 4 days. So it's possible. Maybe in October, maybe in 2023. We will see. Sean Spooner asks, what is one lesson you've learned about yourself since you hit record on episode one? One lesson, I mean, there's so many, but the first one that comes to mind is that you can really get a lot better at something if you do it 250 times. I mean, it's obvious, right? But I don't think a lot of us consider the idea of just going and doing something two or three times a week that's intensive and reflecting on that progress and trying to get better. And also that you're going to have peaks and valleys throughout the process, meaning like you're going to enjoy it at some points more than others. But I think if you just persist through it and it's something that's really important to you, you can really improve at something. And so that's one lesson I've learned about myself, is I'm capable of persisting through the peaks and valleys. How do you deal with the fear of interviewing really famous/important guests? This is from Claudia. The thing that I always think about is like, you are just inherently as valuable as every other person. And maybe that's not actually true for me versus Elon Musk, but I genuinely, at the heart of it, believe that he is a human being, I'm a human being, and if you strip all the societal expectations and if you strip all of it away, at the core of it, he just wants to be loved and he just wants to be respected. And that's the same and true for everybody. And so when I'm interviewing somebody really famous or somebody really important, I just try to remind myself that this is just a human being as well. And yes, they've achieved some incredible feats in their life. And yes, they've created an extraordinary amount of value, but they're also just a human being. And so when I remind myself of that, it lets the fear go away, which is really helpful. And I think also the more you do something, the better you get at it. So that's kind of how I deal with it. My friend Kay, he asks, what are your highest leverage activities, i.e. 10K work? So for me and this podcast, I would say the highest leverage thing I can do is to reach out to guests that are really impactful, who have really impacted my life, and who also can give a great interview, and who also maybe have some audience of some kind. I think reaching out to and conducting interviews is the thing that I love and is the thing that will get me to the places that I want to go, and particularly interviews that are widely received and seen by a lot of people, because that will in turn increase the value of the podcast, which will lead to more high leverage guests coming on. So I guess to sum it up, it's literally reaching out to and conducting interviews with people who I really want to have on the podcast, who can also give great conversations that can hopefully spread. So, yeah. Jay Yang, who was recently followed by the notorious Conor McGregor, asks, what are three common traits between most of your podcast guests? What do you notice they all had in common besides being interviewed by you? One thing that's really interesting to note is a lot of the people that I interview are really excited by life, which leads me to also be excited by life. And another is that they're filled with energy. And a third is like, they're generally speaking, very thoughtful. People who have spent time considering life, spent time considering where their place in life is, time considering their values. So high energy, very thoughtful, and people who are doing what they love. Ted Gonder asks, I want to know more about the story of Danny Miranda pre-podcast. Not just that he was Danny 1.0 and not as disciplined, etc., but what did you do? Where did you come from? How did you spend your time? What were your wins and learning moments before this became your focus and edifice? It's a good question. I probably don't spend enough talking about the origin story of who I am and what type of person I am. Maybe because I don't find it all too compelling, but to give you a little sense of who I was before, I would say that it starts for me when I think about content, and that's the lane that I think about my life going down and how it has at times gone away from that. So I'll explain to you what I mean. When I first started, I was 6 years old, and I, for some reason, saw my parents reading the New York Times one day in kindergarten or first grade. And I said, why don't I create the thing that takes over the New York Times? And this was at 6 years old. And so I had that idea, and I might have written a newsletter when I was 8 or 9. Then when I was 13, I started a time management blog of all things. And 15, I started a Knicks blog. And then I kind of went away from all that content, and I really wanted to fit in. I wanted to be a normal kid. I wanted to go to parties. I wanted to go to college. And I did that, right? Like, I was just a normal kid from, let's say, 16 to 22, 23. And, you know, the reason why I don't talk about it that much, I think, is because it's just not that compelling to me. I was following the path that everyone else was following. I had the same similar thoughts everyone else had, but always in the back of my mind, I said to myself, I know I should be doing something different. I know I should be creating on the internet. I know I should be writing. And I really sacrificed that part of myself so that I could fit in to be more normal, quote unquote. And so that kind of went away as I got older and as I started learning more about myself. But I came from New York, Long Island, New York. I spent my time, you know, partying with friends, just being, for me, how I view it, is just a typical kid. But yeah, I mean, what were some of my wins and learning moments before this became my focus and edifice? I think that's a great question. Some of my wins, I would say, was not taking the default path and really constantly questioning, who am I? What am I about? What am I interested in? Like, that's a true win for me, because I know I easily could have fallen down the rabbit hole of corporate America or just doing what everyone else was doing after college as well. And so the biggest win I can think of is literally just like constantly questioning that narrative. Thank you for the questions, Ted. Very thoughtful. Ethan asks, what would you like to be true about your life at the end of the next 1,095 days, 3 years, based on what is within your control / what you believe you can influence? It's a great question, Ethan. I mean, I hope I still maintain the same love for life that I have in this moment. I hope that at the end of 3 years, I'll be, 30 years old. I hope I am continuing to do this podcast. I hope I'm continuing to talk to really interesting, thoughtful people, hopefully at a grander scale. You know, because I think one key part of this is that I'm not just doing the work, but I also want to do it bigger and better. So, yeah, I mean, what I hope is this podcast is way more successful at the end of 5 years of doing it than it is 2 years of doing it, which it's like similar to going to the gym. It's like almost impossible for it to not grow if you just stay at it. And the progress someone gets from their 2 years to 5 years of going to the gym is incredible. Like you can be in way different shape. Similar to the first 2 years, I'm in a way different place than I was podcasting when I started, but I'm also very far from somebody who's been doing it for 10 or 5 years. It just is a big, there's a lot of growth that's about to happen, I believe, based on what I know about other habits, like lifting weights, for example. And so what do I believe is going to be true about my life? Like just hopefully that I'm continuing doing this at a bigger scale. Hopefully I can continue to get to know myself at a better level. I continue to love learning and I continue talking to amazing people. Raynar asks, why did you start a podcast? What first sparked this interest? So the reason why I started this podcast was because, one, I was talking to people on the phone through Twitter. Well, actually what happened was I put out on Twitter, who wants to talk on the phone? And I had such amazing phone conversations with people that I said, I should probably record these because someone else might find value from it. So that was one thing. Another was that I was reading so many books during quarantine that I said, oh, wow, I'd love to talk to these authors, but why would somebody like Kamal Ravikant or Gary Vaynerchuk, why would they want to talk to me? Or Gay Hendricks? Like they'd have no reason to actually talk to me. And I remember one of my first messages was to Gay Hendricks to invite him on the podcast when I didn't have one. And I said, hey, Gay, I'm thinking about starting this podcast. Would you come on as one of my first guests? And he said, if you build it, I'll come. And that was a real moment of like, oh, wow, you need to provide something to someone else that you admire for them to spend time with you. And it just seemed like a cheat code. Because there were so many people that I respected, I was like, okay, if I can use something to talk to the people that I respect, then why wouldn't I do that? And so the podcast became that avenue for me to get in the rooms with people who I quote unquote didn't belong to be in with yet. And that is still true to this day. And then another reason I started was because, like I said before, I mean, I'd always had an interest in media, in communication, in how do people express themselves. So all of those reasons made sense for me to start a podcast. And I did it saying, I'm going to only try to do it 100 times. I'm not going to get overwhelmed by creating a number one podcast. I'm just going to do it 100 times, see if I like it, and then I'll judge from there. So I was doing 3 a week and it took me, I don't know, don't do public math, but you know, half a year to a year to complete that 100 episodes. And I did it, I think episode 100 is a Q&A similar to this. Then it would be cool to look back to see how they're different. But yeah, that's why I started it. And that's what happened. And it was, so far, it's been the best decision I've ever made in my life. So here's to 250 more. One second here. One thing I've found about success is that I suffer from survivorship bias. Do you get that? Like, quote unquote, I made it to X number of listens. Like if I could do it, any knucklehead could have this. I get weird when I see people not succeeding. Does that happen to you? Kind of. I mean, everybody is different and everybody has different talents and everybody has different gifts that they've been given. And I could imagine a world in which if there was not physical differences, a basketball player could say like, look, this is easy. Like, look, I'm in the NBA. But because we can see the physical differences, we're like, well, he's clearly 6'6" and therefore it's going to be a lot more difficult to do this. But the thing is with intellectual pursuits is we often don't have the raw DNA, meaning like You can't just look at me and know my IQ right now. And I think if there was something like that, we would get a lot more, we'd have a lot more sympathy for people who are trying on a path that we had made it on. And I think it's more difficult to tell the difference in just intellectual pursuits in general. But I mean, part of me thinks like anybody could do it, but also part of me understands that literally not anybody could do it, meaning that the data shows that, what, 90% of people don't post more than 7 episodes. So you literally see 90% of people can't do it who think they can or try it, which is completely fine. But I think this game in particular is one about, and many games are like this, where if you do it long enough, you have to see some sort of gain from it. And the gain doesn't need to be money. It doesn't need to be influence, but the gain could literally be like, oh, wow, I'm better at communicating the thoughts that are in my head into the world. And for me, that's pretty much an incredible ultimate prize. So I don't really get survivorship bias. I know what I've done is unusual, given the fact that most people don't do it and most people haven't done it or can't do it. But yeah, I don't really get weird when I see that stuff. But I do realize I'm lucky in the sense that even if it's work ethic that has gotten me this far, I'm lucky to have the work ethic. So yeah, dovetailing off of the first question, Dan asks, how do you keep perspective, stay grateful, and remember the lucky parts? Second question, do you think everyone should have a pod? How would you suggest they do it so that it's fruitful and fulfilling, even if it doesn't go infinite? How do I keep perspective? Yeah, like you said, I'm amazed at the fact that Sam Parr talked to me and sat down with me for 2 hours, or Tim Chisano, or, you know, Derek Sivers. It's like, Derek Sivers, are you kidding me? This is one of my favorite writers, and he's talking to me for an hour and 17 minutes? Like, for me, that's the craziest thing. And so it's very easy to keep perspective when I find that Derek Sivers is talking to me. It's the coolest thing ever. Do I think everybody should have a podcast? I mean, honestly, it's a lot of work. There's a lot that goes into it that might not appear obvious. It doesn't feel like a lot of work to me because I enjoy the parts that I really enjoy, and it makes everything else really worth it. But I mean, I think if you're listening up to this part of the episode and you've had in that back, the back of your mind of like, should I do a podcast? Should I not? I know people say that I ask good questions, or I know people think that I'm interesting in some way, not to say that I do either of those things, but like, are there signs is really what I'm getting at. Are there signs in your past that this is something that you should do? Then I think it's worth considering. And also, like, are you interested in it? Does it give you joy to do? And not because I enjoy it, but like, do you think that it might give you joy? And I think trying it out for 10 episodes is something that everyone can do. I also think everyone should make an attempt to record more from their own life. For example, like if your parents are still with you, or your grandparents, or your friends, I think it's worth it to record a Zoom call or just get your phone out while you're with them in the same room and just press record on your iPhone or your phone, or to get a tape recorder. Like, all of these things, I think it's memories. One, it'll just make you a better communicator if you do this for 30 minutes weekly, but also it would be such a great memory to have and hold. And it's something that I've done it before, but I want to do more of. One question I get a lot is from, this one's from Josh Gonslaves, who hosts a great podcast himself. And it's the most impactful episode / guest so far. It's a very tough question to answer in sum. I mean, because here's the political answer. It's like every guest is impactful. Every episode is impactful. Obviously, some are more impactful than others because sometimes the guest hits you at that moment. I'm trying to think, like, from a pure just joy perspective, one of the most impactful episodes was the Gary Vaynerchuk episode, just because I've had such a long history with him, and I've just spent a lot of time consuming his content, but also meeting him when I was 15, having him call my mom when I was 15 as well. So that was impactful because it came full circle when I was 25 for episode 39. And so, yeah, I mean, I'll go with that one. It's an easy cop-out answer, but yeah, that's my answer, Josh. What's your spirit animal? My spirit animal, you know, I'm really not that big of a animal person in general. I just love spending time with people. Maybe I love people so much that I haven't become a real big animal person. But if I had to pick one, I would probably choose an animal that is both ambitious but at peace. So if people who know animals better than me, maybe a lion would be a good one, because a lion spends some time on the prowl for a hunt, like a real ambitious thing, but then also spends a lot of his day just laying there, like enjoying the peaceful nature. So maybe a lion would be my spirit animal, but write in the comments below an animal that better suits Sword's ambitions and peace, because I think those are two things that I'm striving for, and it feels like I have bits of every day. This is a great question from Dito. What are your non-negotiables when designing your future life? What are your non-negotiables when designing your future life? So for me, I go right to, I want to be healthy, and I'd love the people in my life to also want to be healthy. And when I say healthy, I mean both physically healthy and healthy from, I guess, a content consumption perspective, because I don't know if we know how to quantify the content we consume and what it does on our minds, but there's definitely a level of health that I think we don't think about. When I say health, there's like physical health, mental health, spiritual health, emotional health. So, I mean, for me, it starts with like, okay, am I getting some physical activity in every day? I think that's really important. I think being surrounded by people who are emotionally available, people who are able and willing and wanting to ask questions, people who are interested in growth, I think those are non-negotiables. Because something I've noticed about myself in particular is I can be very influenced by the people around me. For example, I was just in Austin, and one of the things that I found was that I was living with people who were 21, 22, 23, and they're interested in partying and going out. And I found myself also taking on those behaviors, even though they weren't the things that I most strongly valued. And so I'm happy I did that. It was really fun to go out. But I also know that that is a result of being around people who were like that. And so I guess another way to put this is high in agreeableness. And a non-negotiable for me is not necessarily to change that, but to change the people who I surround myself with so that I can use that agreeableness to be more like or be more agreeable towards people and people who have values more similar to mine. How do you think content creation / consumption will change in the next 10 years? So one trend that I've noticed really that's been coming up is an increase in the amount of content creators who are AI generated. I mean, you see this with DALL-E kind of, where these images are being created, where you could just type it in and like a crazy situation, like somebody should type in like podcaster talks on a river in a stadium, I think would be an interesting Dolly thing to put in. And so what Dolly does is it creates that image and examples of that image. I've never used it, but I've heard it. So anyway, that's an example of how content creation is changing already. It's like more AI generated. And then also like content creators who are AI themselves, which is a little odd to think about. But I think that that's going to become way more common over the next 10 years. Then content consumption. One thing that I think is going to be a huge trend is currently we have no idea how content consumption impacts us. We don't know when we consume something, how that spikes our glucose or how that changes our mood. Imagine a world in which that's possible. And similar to how we have nutrition facts on a lot of different food, we'll also have content facts. It's like right now we're prioritizing for likes and engagement in terms of what we consume. But what will happen when in the future we prioritize for well-being or emotional health? So I think that's one thing that will change. Also, another thing that might change as well is that this is from Balaji Srinivasan, who he says that because many, 1 billion Indian people from India will come online over the next decade, literally gain internet access for the first time, the majority of the English-speaking internet is going to be from India. So I think that's going to change creators and consumers a lot, because maybe there'll be a lot more content creators who are very, very successful that either are from India or are people that the Indian people love and want to be like or respect. So interesting insight from Balaji Srinivasan. Do you have any major regrets? How have they helped you / what do you do to avoid repeating them? I mean, I think everybody has situations where they do something and if they had the knowledge of today, they would go back and change it or do something else. But what I like to do, and something that's really helped me recently, is the statement that I wrote down where it's like, you should treat the past as fate and the future as free will. And I think I've always intuitively thought about it that way, in that having regrets is almost like believing you can change what has already happened. And I think a lot of depression comes from flipping that statement, meaning a lot of people view the past as free will and the future as fate. Oh, this is going to be so the past in the past. Oh, I can change that. And in the future, they treat it like, oh, I can't do anything about it. So I think a lot of happiness comes down to viewing whatever has happened has happened. Don't argue with what has happened already. Like literally this weekend, I went out and partied and drank and can't do anything about it. But in the future, what can I do to change that if I want to change that? And so, yeah, I don't have any major regrets. Like I said, if I had the knowledge of today, one thing that I might do is I might spend more time creating content and not caring about what other people thought about it. But if I had done that, the price I could have paid for that, Dito, who asked the question, is that we might not be friends. And so, I don't know. It's like there is something weirdly calming about knowing that whatever's happened has happened for a reason, or just believing that, even if it might not be true. Like whatever's happened, happened. And you can change things. If you were to go about and change things from the past, that could also lead to negative things. And so I think when I think about major regrets, I think about it happened the way it happened and I'm happy it did. So yeah, that's kind of how I think about it. What is your morning routine? Asked my friend Zach Stempler. So I used to have a very robust morning routine. I would get up, meditate, wouldn't look at screens for a while. And I would journal a bit. I would do some breath work. And all that stuff helped me when quarantine was just getting started and I wanted to get myself off on the right foot. But what I found and what really changed my mind on this was this guy named Alex Hormozi, who has some great content. You should check out Alex Hormozi. And that he is a very successful business entrepreneur at a very young age. And his whole idea is like, I just have some coffee and just get to work. And there was something that was weirdly stoic, and I really appreciated that. And so now what I tend to do is I wake up, I go outside first thing in the morning just to get that sunlight. I look outside for 10 minutes. I got this from Dr. Andrew Huberman, and have some coffee, and then I just get to work. And so I don't know if either way is right. I think at some points it's good to have a thought out, well-executed morning routine. It can really get you on the right foot. But I think it also at other points it's fine if it's not so perfected and everything like that. But that's just what I do. And you know, I'm curious to hear other people's morning routines below. Colin Campbell asks, what topics excite you most? What's so funny about this question is like it's constantly changing. And if I think about August 2021, the topic that excited me the most was NFTs, but I haven't thought about NFTs in a very serious context in 6 months. So it's constantly changing. A few things that I'm really excited about in this moment are thinking about the way the future is going to go. That topic has, like, just the future in general, and people who are smart about the future, that is exciting me. And I think maybe the reason why I was excited about NFTs was because I believed that they would be the future, and I still do believe they will be the future. Just my idea for the time frame of that was messed up. So the future excites me. I would say that communication is really exciting me as well. Communication being, there's so many different ways to communicate. How are we taking the ideas that are in our brain and getting them out to people? What are the different ways you can explore doing that? Like, communication is what I've realized is at the heart of everything I do. It was the heart of me wanting to create the newspaper that would take over the New York Times. Like, I wanted to do that because I was interested in communication. So that topic is exciting to me, always has been exciting to me. Psychology, the brain. Those are some things that are exciting me right now. What has been the hardest episode to research and prepare for? This is a good question, and I haven't really spent a lot of time thinking about this, but I would say it's hard to prepare often when the guest doesn't have a lot of stuff where they've created. And one of the things that I do is I talk to a lot of creators or entrepreneurs, and so they usually do have a lot of stuff on them. But I mean, I did an interview with my Uber driver, and that was hard to prepare for because I didn't know who he was really. That was my first time, other than the Uber ride, where I could communicate with him. But yeah, I mean, conversations where there's not a lot on the person are the hardest ones. What is something you've worked on a lot that you still struggle with? Also, a great question from Colin Campbell. What is something you've worked on a lot that you still struggle with? I would say this podcast, honestly. I've worked on this podcast and growing it, and I'm still struggling with the best ways to grow it, the best ways to get attention on this thing. And it's kind of an odd thing too that I don't feel shameless about is like, and I guess I'll explain why, but it's kind of weird where you are working to get people to pay more attention to you or your thing, and it's you talking. And there's something odd about that intuitively. But I mean, I've struggled to grow it to the point that I want to. And I've actually been writing down over the past month and a half, the Danny Miranda podcast gets over 1 million downloads per month by January 2023. Something I've been saying to myself over and over and over again repeatedly. And so I've been doing this for the past month and a half, probably wrote it down 2,000 times in that time span. And just, I think the way to get better, or I think just focusing on something more will bring that result closer, is what an intuitive belief I have. And so I've worked on growing this podcast a lot. I haven't really been all too successful with it. I mean, I've gotten some incredible guests. I've gotten, I believe, better as an interviewer, better at doing research, but I haven't really gotten the audience that I would have expected if you had told me I was doing it for 2 years. I'm fine that it's not here, but I do want to grow the show and grow this way more. And so I know that it'll take a while, and it clearly has. And so if I didn't love doing the interviews, if I didn't love asking questions, if I didn't love doing the research, I wouldn't have done it. This is one of the longest things I've ever done in my life. And I'm still going. So the reason for that is because I love the craft of it, but it also, it's something I struggle with. And so if anyone has any thoughts on growing the podcast, DM me or write them in the comments below. Is living with purpose and ambition really what makes life meaningful? It's a great question from SNE Chow. I mean, at some points in your life, if that's what you desire, yeah, it certainly can. I think we're very often happy when we are living with purpose and when we're chasing after something that is meaningful to us. Certainly creates a meaningful life in some respect. But I also think, well, there's two parts to this, right? Like, is living with purpose really what makes life meaningful? Perhaps. Is living with ambition really what makes life meaningful? Sometimes. I mean, it depends. Ambition for what? If it's ambition for something that you don't find meaningful, then your life isn't going to be meaningful, right? You can have ambition to build an e-commerce store, and you could find at the end of it or while you're doing it that the e-commerce store isn't really all that meaningful to you. And then you could say, well, my life isn't meaningful because my ambition is towards the wrong thing. But I think living with purpose is slightly different in that if you're living with purpose, well, that inherently to me insinuates some bit of meaning that you are drawing from it. And it insinuates that you've thought about your purpose with what you're doing. So I do believe that living with purpose makes your life more meaningful. What podcast do you listen to? From MayaParker.eth. All these next four also from MayaParker.eth. So the podcasts that I listen to right now are a few. I would say My First Million, Sean Puri Sampar. Got Modern Wisdom, Chris Williamson. Tim Ferriss Show, Joe Rogan. Those are really, I would say, the four go-tos that I have. But there are many others. And I always discover new podcasts from researching guests that are coming on. And so, yeah, those are the first four that come to mind, but also, you know, very open to other people, and especially people I follow on Twitter. It's like, I'll see someone's coming out with a new podcast, very interested in those ideas usually, and what they got going on. Who do you learn from the most? It's a good question as well from MayaParker.eth. I mean, one of the people I learn from the most is Derek Sivers. And the reason for that is he has built and had more ideas that have changed or altered my perspective than almost any other thinker that I can really recall. And you should definitely check out Sivers.org for his blog and catalog. He puts basically everything out for free. And but also, one thing that was clear from talking to him and was super helpful from talking to him is that he is an explorer. He's not a leader. And I mean that, and I draw that distinction because he drew it himself. And I think there's certainly benefit to being an explorer. And I felt I was an explorer for a year or maybe a year and a half when I was trying to figure out what was the next thing that I was going to do. And then I also think it's okay to change, to be a leader at some points. And so although I love and appreciate and respect a lot of Derek's ideas, I also need to keep in mind that the life that he's living is not the life that I want to be living in this moment. And I love his ideas. I love his work, but you know, I'm trying to be more of a leader. And so because of that, you look more towards people who are leaders themselves. So for me, that would be people like Jocko Willink. That would be people like Gary Vaynerchuk. And so, yeah, that's where I'm at for who I learn from. What was your life like before podcasting? I kind of explained it before with that question from Ted. But I mean, I would say that I was somebody who was very interested in ideas, interested in people, interested in communication, interested in psychology, but not really knowing how that all was going to manifest, how that all was going to come to be. So I would say my life before podcasting was somebody who was exploring and somebody who was slightly lost. But you know, being lost is an important part to eventually one day becoming found, which I feel like I found my thing from doing the podcast so often. What do you use to make your YouTube shorts? I use Final Cut Pro, and I started video editing about 2 months ago, so I'm very new in the video editing department, as you can tell from my super, super high quality TikToks and YouTube shorts. But I mean, yeah, Final Cut Pro is a software that I use. And lastly, what tips do you have for podcasters? Well, a lot. I mean, I have a lot of tips. I hopefully they're useful. But one thing that comes to mind right away is the importance of understanding that the gains from what you're doing might not be there in the beginning. And if you can stay true to that vision you had in the beginning, while also iterating on the process, you can achieve massive results. So what do I mean by that in practicality? My first 40 episodes were audio only. Literally think about that. You know, no TikTok clips, no video podcasts, no timestamps, none of that. Just literally an audio only phone call. So that's how it started. The next, what I did was I added a video component to it. When I heard that Gary Vaynerchuk wanted to come on the show, I said, wow, I should probably add a video component to this to add to it, to help more people see it potentially. Then it was the video component. After the video component, I said, how can I make this better? Let me start doing timestamps. And then let me start doing clips. And then it was like, let me start doing in person. And then it was like, let me do a lot more clips and let me do the clips myself instead of outsourcing it. So I guess this is more so a tip for anybody doing anything, but it's to really look at your process after once a month, once every 3 months and say, how could I do this a little bit better? And I just have constantly been asking myself that for the past 2 years. And now, you know, the podcast is in person and there's a lot of clips and, you know, over the past month and a half, it's done 4.7 million views on TikTok and we're crossing in on 1 million views on YouTube. And it's like, those are hopefully very small numbers in a year, in 3 years, in 5 years. But to me, they feel like good results right now because I know how it feels to get, you know, no downloads, very few downloads and very few views. And I still feel that to some extent. But at the same time, I know that there have been moments and sparks of like, you're on the right path. And I've gotten enough of those from not just myself, but other people to let me know that, yeah, this is pretty good. And this will continue getting better. And you're doing the right thing and keep building it. And so I'm going to, because I enjoy it. And it seems like the people who have given it a shot so far enjoy it as well. And I think if you're getting those signs as a podcaster, you know, keep going is the number one tip. Then like, I'll give you a practical tip also for interviewers specifically, and podcasters is broad because that also could mean people like Ben Wilson from How to Take Over the World, who does his podcast is more so he'll research something and then he'll do a monologue about it, more so like this, but not a Q&A. And then there's podcasts like True Crime Podcast as well, which tell like a narrative story. And so I'll focus on interviewers for this question. What tip do I have for an interviewer? One thing is to focus on yourself less than the person you're talking to. And I think this really comes across and comes away as very endearing. I love when I'm on a show and somebody is just so enthralled with me. And so I assume that if and when I do that to other guests, they are also really appreciative of their moment to feel completely seen. Because really that's what I'm trying to do as an interviewer, is I'm really trying to see the person for who they are. And it's why people tell me after like, wow, that was different, or wow, that felt really good. The reason for that is because I really tried my hardest to show them love, to look at their story in totality, to ask them the questions that they've never been asked before, but it's been the questions that they themselves have thought of and have wondered about, or maybe they never have, and to bring those to their attention. So yeah, those are my tips for podcasters, and I really appreciate you listening up until this point. Thank you for your time, your attention. I don't take any of that lightly and for granted. And I hope we do it for another 250 or 2,500 more episodes. And I can't wait to see what this show looks like around that time. But thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for listening. And I'll see you in the next episode. Peace.